Fellow Toastmasters and guests, most of us don't like thinking about death. I don't like thinking about death, but I'm very aware of how suddenly and unexpectedly it can affect our lives. I was married to my first wife for nearly 20 years. Then, one Sunday, she felt a little bit off colour. On the Monday, she had a really bad headache. On the Tuesday, she had an even worse headache. The worst headache she ever had, she said. On Wednesday, it seemed like she was getting better. On Thursday, she was dead. At 4:30 that morning, she woke me, said she was feeling a bit strange and needed a cuddle. At 7 o'clock, her speech was slurred and she couldn't move the limbs on her left side. I thought she'd had a stroke. She was rushed to Hornsby Hospital. There, she was stable, so she was just being kept under observation. My son, who was 12 at that time, who was with me, he had the choice to stay with me at the hospital or to go to school. He chose to go to school. By the time I arrived back at the hospital, Julie was unconscious with a tube down her throat enabling her to breathe. She was rushed to Royal North Shore Hospital. CAT scans had revealed a double brain hemorrhage. One hemorrhage on the left hemisphere, which explained the slurred speech and the lack of limb movement. But much more importantly, the other hemorrhage was at the back of the brain, which is why she stopped breathing. The plan at Royal North Shore Hospital was to drill a hole in her skull to relieve the pressure on her brain. They had to do an angiogram first to determine exactly where the blockage was. If there was anything that would have been helped by me staying there, I would have stayed there, but I felt it was more important to be home with my son. He, at this stage, was after school and was with the next door neighbour. The moment I arrived back, I had a call from the surgeon asking me to come back. If it was good news, he would have told me on the phone. I returned to the hospital to find out that the angiogram had revealed that there wasn't enough blood getting to Julie's brain, that she was effectively brain dead and that it was irreversible. I then had to return home and perform the most difficult task of my life. There is nothing that has happened in my life to compare with the job of telling a 12-year-old boy that his mother has just died. With family around us, we wept late into the night. But before I left the hospital, a doctor asked me, had I considered donating Julie's organs? There was no hesitation. My immediate answer was yes. And the reason there was no hesitation is that Julie and I had often talked about organ donation and the fact that we would gladly give our organs if such a misfortune happened to one of us. Let me tell you about what happened to some of those people who received Julie's organs. Somebody received her lungs. When somebody receives a donation of a lung, typically these people have 1 or 2 weeks left to live. They are permanently attached to an oxygen bottle. They barely can get enough breath, even with that oxygen bottle, to speak, let alone do anything. Julie's gift gave this person life. The same can be said for the recipient of Julie's heart. Two people received Julie's kidneys. There are 8,000 people in Australia subject to dialysis because of failed kidneys. Only 1,500 of those make it to the waiting list to receive an organ. There's no point for the other 6,500 because there aren't enough kidneys out there. They have no hope except dialysis, day after day, week after week, month after month. Can't go on holidays, can't hold down the job, can't do anything except survive. Somebody received sight because they received one of Julie's corneas. There are 3,000 people in Australia waiting for organs. Of the people waiting for hearts and lungs and livers, 20% of those people will die before that organ becomes available. When a plane goes down and 300 people die, that makes headlines. Now, I don't want to downplay the incredible tragedy of a plane crash, and I know that is a terrible thing. But the same number of people thereabouts die every year waiting for an organ. Why is this so? Australia has one of the highest success rates for organ and tissue transplant in the world. And yet Australia also has one of the lowest registration rates in the world. If you haven't signed up with the Organ Donor Registry, I ask the question, why not? Your organs are no good to you when you're dead. What is the point of taking your organs with you to be burnt in a crematorium or to rot 6 feet under? I have plenty of forms if anybody wants to take one from me. You sign up, you say, if the circumstances are right, I want to donate. There's one further thing to do after you've done that, and that's talk to your family. Even if you sign this form, if your family protests, they will win. The organ will not be donated. Sign the form, talk to your family, tell them why you've signed up, tell them why it's important to you, tell them the story of people whose lives have been saved. Tell them that you want good to come from bad.